On Thursday, the people of Uganda went to the polls in what has been called the country's most controversial election campaign yet. These were the first multi-party elections since the National Resistance Army and Movement captured power in 1986. At the end of the day Saturday, Uganda's Electoral Commission declared that President Yoweri Museveni had been re-elected with just over 59% of the vote. Madeleine Albright once called Museveni a beacon of hope for democracy in Africa, but lately his government has been drawing fierce criticism for stifling the press, vote rigging, and modifying the Constitution so he can continue to hold office. Both Museveni and his trusted generals suggested that they would not hand over power even if they lost. Last week, three opposition supporters were shot by security forces during a campaign increasingly marred by bouts of violence. In a voting fracas in the Northeast, Museveni's legal advisor, Fox Odoi, was photographed carrying an automatic pistol as five half-naked captives lay nearby. After he took the picture, Daily Monitor photographer John Emojong was beaten by Odoi and then arrested. Outsiders have, by and large, turned a blind eye. According to Dr. Tajuddin Abdul Rahim, co-director of Justice Africa, the majority of reports so far, including that of the African Union, suggest that in spite of a few incidents, including violence, they are confident that the campaigns have generally been okay and look forward to a free and fair election. On the day of the election, Onyango Abo, a Kenyan editor with the Nation Media Group, called the campaign the most bitterly fought and personality attack filled since Museveni came to power in January 1986 at the head of a successful rebellion. He also said, quote, "It's the first time the optimists in opposition feel that Museveni is beatable," end quote. From the beginning, the Museveni government imposed what it called a no-party system. Critics said it was no different than old-style African one-party rule. Under the no-party system, candidates stand on their own individual merit, not on political party platforms. Museveni's ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM, on the other hand, could back candidates because, unlike the old political parties, its supporters were understood to be standing on the individual merit principle. They could also get campaign contributions from the NRM secretariat, which was funded by the taxpayer. Despite obvious flaws, the country embraced the no-party idea, and between 1986 and 1996, Museveni enjoyed a level of popularity unparalleled in recent Uganda history. By the mid-1990s, inflation had been reduced from 300% 10 years earlier to minus 1%. Growth rates approached 10%. Museveni became the archetype of the new breed of African leader, and Uganda was touted as the continent's economic success model. However, parts of the country that weren't substantially represented in the NRM felt alienated, none more so than the northern region. In the British colonial division of labor, the north was the reservoir for manual labor and the army. The southwest provided the professional classes and civil servants. Museveni's ascendance to power brought a profound crisis for the North. For the first time in Uganda's history, the region held neither military nor political power. Without either, it lost all means of negotiating for the political spoils at the center. In many parts of the country, northern rule had become so deeply resented that the combination was explosive. After Museveni's victory, a period of massacres, rebellions, negotiations, and more violence preceded the emergence of the present Lord's Resistance Army led by Joseph Kony. Abbo speculates that without the rebellion in the North, Museveni might be enjoying a status near that of South Africa's Nelson Mandela. But that insurgency and several smaller ones in the South and West put an end to such prospects because of his failure to fully pacify the country. Today, everything is worse off in what was an already economically depressed northern region than in the rest of Uganda. Poverty levels are almost twice as high. HIV infections are double the national average. Life expectancy is nearly 10 years less than the rest of the country. And the school enrollment rate is the worst, too. It's here that 20 to 30,000 children travel tens of kilometers every night to find a place to sleep where they will not be kidnapped into Kony's army. The war in the North strengthened the hands of the hardliners in the NRM. When the first elections under Museveni came, the rebellion in the North was used by his opponents to argue that the no-party system was a failure. For the NRM, it explained why they had to have a strong mandate. The NRM won a big victory in 1994. From then on, they needed the LRA insurgents because the Northern card had become a magic formula for winning elections. In the late 90s, after years of uncritical support, Uganda's donor nations began to murmur about finding a political settlement to the war in the North, reducing defense expenditure and, as they put it, opening up the political space. According to Abbo, by that time, defense expenditure had become a critical source of political slush funds for Museveni's no-party NRM party. Nearly everyone agrees that elections are helpful in reducing conflict, but if they're rigged, conducted during active fighting, or attract a low turnout, they can be ineffective or even harmful. Take, for example, Afghanistan, Iraq, Nigeria, or even Ukraine. Is Uganda a paragon of economic success or a state on the threshold of failure? Is this the history of a government delivering political goods, or is this government losing control of its territory and its monopoly on the legitimate use of force? Instead of holding bona fide elections, Museveni accelerated his donor-mandated privatization program in an attempt to create a class of moneyed people who were beholden to the NRM. The aroma of corruption was damaging his reputation when he found a disastrous way out. In 1998, Uganda's army was already stationed inside a security buffer in the Democratic Republic of Congo when a fresh rebellion broke out. Some elements of the NRM took advantage of the chaos to exploit the DRC's vast resources and raise money for politics back home, particularly for the 2001 elections. There is a widely held view that the DRC occupation was the turning point for Museveni's presidency. When Kizzy Besigye ran against him in 2001, a special militia, the Kalangela Action Plan, was set up to unleash violence on Museveni's rival supporters. The election, which Museveni eventually won, was marred by extensive rigging. Besigye challenged the result in the Supreme Court. By a unanimous decision, all five judges agreed the elections had been stolen. However, by a vote of 3-2, they also held that rigging couldn't have affected the final outcome. Even so, the president's prestige declined. Besigye fled into exile in South Africa, where he lived until the end of October last year. Admiration for Museveni has been on the wane, and internal divisions inside the NRM on the rise. If he wanted to run again, he had to find a new source of legitimacy. So late last year, he agreed to support the reintroduction of multi-party politics. Besigye returned from exile to huge and passionate crowds. As he traveled around the country, his reception was like none other. In some towns, they had to cancel his rallies as the crowds ran out of control. Basigia seemed to tap into the pent-up frustration from 20 years of Museveni's rule. The government panicked, and barely 2 weeks after his return, Basigia was arrested and charged in the High Court with rape, treason, and terrorism. The day Basigia was arrested, running battles broke out between his supporters and heavily armed police, including soldiers in armored vehicles. It was the first time since the last years of colonial rule in the 1950s that ordinary Ugandans, other than university students, had taken to streets in a political protest. Basigia spent a month in prison, with dramatic scenes whenever he came to court. Because of large crowd turnouts on the days he was in court, streets were closed off. On the day he and his co-accused were to be granted bail, a previously secret commando unit, the Black Mambas, surrounded the court. The prisoners and their sureties, fearing what might happen to them if they were taken away by the commandos, gave up their right to bail and decided to be taken back to the civilian prison. This was a Uganda many thought had gone with Amin, and it did little to help Museveni. It turned Besigye from a party leader into a symbol of democracy and gave him national recognition far more than anything he or his party could have paid to get. However, after his release late December, the novelty he had as a candidate running from a prison cell evaporated, and he lost the election. On a regional level, Uganda's elections were being watched for something else. By 2013, the three partner countries in the East African Community, Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda, planned to establish a political federation. Uganda is the only country in the EAC that has never had a democratic change of leaders. That's it for this Monday. If you'd like to suggest a story or comment about anything you hear on World Report, email Earthling, that's EARTHLING, at netidea.com. Put World Report in the subject line to make sure I don't mistake your message for spam. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.